Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
80% of Liberal Democrat members are probably part of the LGBTQ community.
80%?
Yeah, honestly, come to Lib Dem conference, you'll have a great time.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true, it's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, home? We get together, we be simple. Simple. Be simple for me.
He will, like, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
But ready to go again, Carly, you ready to go?
Yeah, ready.
More political hard talk. So, Lib Dems, we were just discussing then, over a quick drink, how they're probably not going to end up in power at the next election, but they might end up in that position they've been in before, where they hold the balance of power again. Do you want that responsibility? Not you personally, but like, well, yeah, I guess you and the party.
I think one of the things that, like I said, as I said before, you know, there was a lot of things during that coalition period that I was very uncomfortable with because it wasn't my type of politics. But one of the things that I was proud of was that we stepped up at a time when we needed to step up, even though it meant like pretty much the annihilation of our party at that time. So I would like to think so. But at the same time, you know, I can't see us aligning with either of those two major parties at the moment. You know, I would be more comfortable in a coalition with the Labour Party, probably. But that being said, I don't think the Labour Party in government at the moment are a progressive party. Some of the things that they're doing doesn't feel progressive to me. So, you know, you're giving me the choice between a Conservative Party or a Conservative Party or an even worse Conservative Party.
Well, there's another word for them, I think, when they're even worse.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
I thought this might have been a bit PG, so I didn't want to say it.
So a lot of people still feel burned by 2010. And I know you discussed some of the things that you were proud of that the Liberal Democrats got through when they were in coalition with the Conservatives. But there was austerity at the end of that. Tuition fees is the big one. I think the reason Lib Dem support collapsed, one of the main reasons, because it was such a tangible thing when they put it in their manifesto and then they turned round on that. It was obviously unrealistic. They couldn't deliver that in government with someone. But people were really upset by that. Why should those voters who had their fingers burnt last time, and I'm one of them actually, trust the Lib Dems wouldn't repeat those mistakes?
So I've got quite a good anecdote for this, but and I'm going to answer that question. But first of all, I find it interesting. Obviously, there's people in this room here who will have an opinion, but just interested to hear what you think. Like, why do you think the Lib Dems are held to such a higher standard than the other parties?
Because, all of the parties?
Because it feels to me that the Labour Party can get things wrong and people be angry with them in the moment. But then further down the line, it's kind of like, yeah, but I'm Labour, aren't I? So, you know, it just is what it is. The Conservative Party can get things wrong. Oh yeah, but deep down I'm a Conservative, so like, you know, I'll vote for them. But we got 100% hand on heart. We got things wrong during that period. But why is that still something that is put to us and not the Conservative Party or not the Labour Party when they've made mistakes?
I think the Conservative Party is held to account for that period.
I don't think it is, personally.
Well, I mean, they were just voted out like just like the year before last in a landslide. I think people still think that they did wrong there. But for me, sometimes it's the direction that we went down when that, after that coalition government, you know, there were a number of options on the table. We went down that route, and ultimately that ended in Brexit, and that ultimately leads to where we are now. And I know it sounds like I'm throwing it all on the Lib Dems, and I'm not. But I think when you've got something as tangible as we'll get rid of tuition fees and then you don't get rid of tuition fees, people are always going to, that's a shopping list of very simple things that you haven't done. And I think people are always going to hold you accountable to that. Also, the Lib Dems being in power is a bit more of a, oh, the Lib Dems are in power. That's quite different, isn't it? And I think it just sticks in people's memory. How do you move on from that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's part of that that is very fair. And I think it goes back to the issue that a lot of careerist politicians tend to have, which is they don't tell a story about where we are as a country and where we need to be. And the Lib Dems were just as guilty of that as the Labour Party are now. I mean, I think a lot of people's frustration with the current Labour government is because there's no narrative of here's where we are, here's where we need to be. It's just kind of, do you know, this is going to be really bad. I think that was actually Keir Starmer's first speech. Was it, do you know, this is going to be really bad? So it was, you know, on us for not telling that story. And, you know, there were certain things that happened that I'm not comfortable with, progressive people wouldn't have been comfortable with, and liberals wouldn't have been comfortable with. And I think I've always got to kind of remind people and remind myself when I get frustrated about it, because I do get frustrated about that time in government. I've got to remind myself that we were a minority party, and the difference now, so if we had the majority that Labour have now in government, you would have seen good Liberal Democrat policies from Lib Dem boffins who, you know, write the most detailed manifestos, and it does me head in most of the time because they just spend hours and hours in committee rooms doing that.
Are you just but, like, you're never going to get a chance to do this, so why are you bothering?
I mean, I think politics is so volatile at the moment. I mean, we were just talking in the break then about, you know, there was one constituency in this country where someone won with about 25% of the vote, which is absolutely crazy. And that could be happening around the country. And that's why I think at the moment politics is so strained, because this reform lead and all these polls that are saying they're going to get a majority in government, 300 odd seats in parliament, they're going to get that on a very small percentage of the vote. And that's why fundamentally I think the voting system is the thing that needs to change. It's not fit for purpose, and it's not fit for a five-party system. But I always, just to answer your question properly, I always kind of, I was thinking about this when I was at home, and I've tried it on a few doors in Liverpool, and the people I've spoke to, actually it's resonated with. Is anyone like a football fan here?
Sorry.
Yeah. Wrong one. Yeah. Maybe I should use a different anecdote.
Dad is.
So basically, this could apply to hockey, or it could apply to any sport.
Oh, you're into ice hockey now? Okay. Me too.
That's gone completely over my head, by the way. But I'm guessing I know the reason.
Like, yeah.
so in like Liverpool obviously goes through periods of either success or failure.
Football club,
yeah. And any sporting team can go through that. And I liken that period of the Liberal Democrats to Liverpool under Roy Hodgson. So we had a really bad period under a manager that wasn't really kind of pulling the strings and enthusiastic, or making the city enthusiastic. And I just say, you wouldn't stop watching Liverpool Football Club because the manager was really bad at the time. You still support the club and you think, God, I gotta go and watch them again. They're playing absolutely awful. But you know things will change and things will get better. And I think it's the same with political parties. And I don't just mean this with the Lib Dems. I mean this with other parties. So obviously Keir Starmer is in charge of the Labour Party now. That will change in the future. The same with the Conservatives and others, for better or worse. So I always say, don't judge a party, an organisation, a sports club by one period in history. You've got to look at the wider picture and the principles on what they stand on.
Okay.
I feel like I'm convincing you, like, slightly.
Yeah, I just think people aren't going to do that. I think Andy Burnham, if Andy Burnham was, this is what I was thinking then, if Andy Burnham was leader of the Labour Party, would you as a Liberal Democrat feel a little bit more comfortable about supporting them in a coalition?
I mean, perhaps, perhaps, I think Burnham's got like an air of common sense about him, which I think is missing in politics.
Great communicator.
And he is, you know, we've got to give him that. He's a fantastic communicator. I think if I'm being heavily...
Red as well, isn't he?
No, he's a blue. Oh. So that goes against him.
No one got that.
But stunned silence in the room. But if I'm being heavily critical of Burnham for a moment, he's a bit of an opportunist himself, to be honest.
You're not the first person I've heard say that. Why do you say that? Was that because of his sort of behaviour at the Labour Party conference? Do you think he just wants to say anything that's popular just to get himself ahead at the moment? What's the reason for that?
I think his positions on a few things have changed and maybe aren't consistent. And I, there's part of me that feels bad about saying that because I'm a politician and a human being that thinks that your opinion changes when the facts change.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really kind of toxic thing about politics, that politicians, because they've held a view, like feel that they always need to hold that view. So I feel a bit bad in saying that, like he's changed position. But I think it's when you change a lot of positions in quick succession, and I feel like he's done that. I also feel like you look at the Labour Party and there's not a lot of other people that you could see as someone to succeed Keir Starmer, which says an awful lot. To be honest, when you've got 400 MPs, there's not a lot of talent there.
It's just a lot about how he manages that as well, doesn't it? If he's one of them people that kind of anyone that a vacuum of power underneath the leader. That's kind of a very common thing amongst dictators.
That's what he is, though. I mean,
he's a dictator. Yes, we got to. Right.
So the only thing I'd say about Keir Starmer is he's that typical boring middle manager, isn't he?
Isn't that the job he was elected to play though, like a bore?
A little bit, I suppose. A little bit, but I think. So I was always told when I got involved in politics, you've got like people who are good at leadership and not necessarily good at management, and then people who are good at management and not necessarily good at leadership. And sometimes, like, you know, some special people can be good at both. I'm probably not good at both. I'm not probably a good manager, but I like to think that I'm a good leader. Whereas I don't think Keir Starmer is a good leader, but I think he's probably a good manager. And coming out of the back of, you know, all that conservative rule, I think you probably needed something or someone who was a good leader. And to give Burnham his credit, he probably fits that mold.
Yeah, yeah. I think he does. And I think he'll be, I do think he'll be the next prime minister, whether people like it or not, really. It just seems to be the direction of travel. If the Liberal Democrats were part of a future government, and like we've said, 2029 could be, anything could happen, couldn't it? You know, what are the non-negotiables this time? I feel like he didn't have any non-negotiables last time, or did you? There's about two questions there. So what would be the non-negotiables this time?
Well, I think one thing I'd like to get over is so there's kind of this misconception that if we went into coalition with the Labour Party, that there wouldn't have been any like cuts or anything like that, and things would have been rosy and it would have been like a perfect world. That's just not the case. And if you look at there's a chart, like I always try and go back to this when I can find it, but then I delete it off my phone and then try and re-find it again. So there's a chart which shows you the pledged cuts in each party's manifesto. And it shows you like the Conservatives are right up here. Like the Labour Party are like here and the Lib Dems are like down here. And the actual cuts implemented are something like that is actually below what the Labour Party committed to. So I think kind of when people say you just went into coalition and you just, you know, you didn't stop the Conservatives doing anything, it's just wildly inaccurate. And, you know, a lot of the reforms to welfare, even though there was still some that went through, that again, I wasn't comfortable with, there was a lot that got stopped as well. My non-negotiables would certainly be, you know, things on LGBTQ rights, things on trans rights, cuts to welfare that we're seeing at the moment. I think that's something that would be a non-negotiable, and something that I'm quite happy that has changed. And I think we should celebrate when people change their mind for the right reasons, is the two-child benefit cap. And I've got to say, so I always think of my dad as a good barometer of politics. And I say that because he's not political, and he's probably like your typical voter in the sense that he hears things and he makes up his mind based on like feelings. Sometimes like he can read into things, and sometimes, to give him his due, he comes up with something pretty decent. But the other day he said to me, he said, "I tell you what," he said, "that two-child benefit cap," he said, "I can't believe they've scrapped that, you know." And I said, "Why do you think that?" And he said, "You're just rewarding people who are having kids." I said, "But if you've seen the amount of money that people get after the second child, you wouldn't have a child for that reason." And I think there's this huge, and that's not discrediting him, by the way. That's the
My mum said the same thing.
It's the media narrative, isn't it? And partly why Keir Starmer and the Labour Party wouldn't pledge to that is because they were following that media narrative. And I think, you know, quite often the right-wing media controls people's thoughts in this country about like the welfare state, about the NHS, and about other social issues. And I think that's probably the thing where you need someone who's a bit more gutsy and a bit more progressive to come in and say, this is the red line, and we've got to tell a story about why this will raise, you know, so many thousand children out of poverty.
And you've got to have them stories, them anecdotes ready to push back against the, oh, well, they're only spending it getting the nails done, which is what my mum said. So compared to Labour and the Conservatives and the Greens now as well, I feel like they've really stolen your thunder. What do the Lib Dems offer that's genuinely different?
Are you a member of the Green Party?
No.
I feel like you've mentioned that about four or five times.
No. I just think that like the Green Party is currently, Poland is the most popular party in London, and it's the most popular party for under 35s, I think, in some of the latest polling. So you'd be mad not to take the Greens into account, really. And it just kind of muddies the waters, doesn't it? Because they're a party that people don't have too many negative opinions on, that sits somewhere that's not red and it's not blue. So... yeah. Yeah, what are the differences between the Lib Dems and yet those other parties? I mean, we know there's difference when it comes to reform.
Yeah, so I like to think of myself as, I don't really like to think of politics in terms of left and right, but I like to think of it in terms of you're either like conservative or you're progressive, and there's like a scale of that, and I'm certainly on that progressive side. Mm-hmm. I think society gets better when you make progress. But I also think you need to be tempered in that progress. You know, you're not going to take people on a journey with you if you say you have to upheave the social system and social society within a matter of months. And I think that's what you get from, you know, the left-wing populist parties.
They like want to move too fast. Like
100%. And right. It's not doable in the first instance. And this whole wealth tax, it's very easy to say, isn't it? And it's... the reason I think the Greens have done quite well recently is because it's easy to say, it's easy to get, and a lot of people feel very, very hurt by the way society is at the moment, and they think that it's a lot of wealthy people. Now, there's a lot of people with wealth that are not to blame. There's a small percentage of people with wealth that are to blame and have basically monopolized certain parts of society. That needs to be tackled 100%. But this wealth tax idea, so talking about a tax on assets, like you've got to understand like the financial implication of that, because a lot of these assets aren't tangible. Like, how do you tax something that like isn't tangible, that isn't an income? So if someone's got a property that's worth so many million pounds and they say, right, that's increased like 50,000 this year, you owe us a certain amount of money. Like if that's like, you know, Mrs. Miggins from down the road who's inherited that house, she hasn't got like £5,000 in the bank to pay that. So it's
she does have a £2 million house.
She has, but like, do you expect her to sell that house or to remortgage that house? So it's very nice to say it's not implementable in practice. And I think that's what the Lib Dems offer that the Greens don't, is practical policies. So stuff that can be implemented. And I say that there's, so when the Greens were coming out with this, I wrap my brains thinking, well, I do think that people who have gamed society should pay their fair share. And how could you practically do that? And there's some Lib Dem policies that practically do that. So that's a tax on private jet flights. So no, like, you know, a lot of us in this room, yourself and myself, I couldn't imagine a lifestyle where you could afford to go on a private jet, and those private jets aren't taxed accordingly, and particularly according to the type of pollution that they put into the world as well. A tax, a sewage tax on the water companies, you know, water companies that are dumping sewage in the rivers, water companies that have been privatised.
When you just nationalise them?
I personally would nationalise them. And I was saying this before, I feel like I was told that the older I got, the more conservative I would get. I'm finding the older I get, the more left wing I'm getting, to be perfectly honest.
Don't tell Ed Davey that.
I know, yeah. But as I've got older and I've looked at like society, I've got something else to say on this as well, actually, that's quite relevant. But as I've got older and I've looked at society, I've thought, capitalism isn't inherently a bad thing, but unfettered capitalism certainly is a bad thing. And what has happened is we haven't created a free market. We've created a free for all where people can literally monopolize institutions like water, like gas, like electric, and there's no competition. The whole idea of the free market and the whole idea of capitalism, sorry, I'm getting really like philosophical now, but the whole idea of capitalism is to promote competition, to give you and me and everyone here like choice in what they purchase. And that's not what's happening in society at the moment. And the really interesting part of that is I was speaking to a conservative of all people the other day, forgive me for me sins, but they said that this whole idea of kind of, you know, massively pro-capitalism at all costs and neoliberalism, it isn't conservatism. So there's a lot of people that seen what Thatcher did and others after her, and even Blair to an extent, and say that isn't like what this society or conservatism was about. And actually that three for all is, I think, was the start of what we're experiencing now.
Yeah. Which is
people essentially paying ridiculous gas and electric bills and going, this doesn't seem right, this. And there's absolutely nothing that the government can do about it except subsidize the gas and electric companies.
It's not very competitive, is it? You can't drill under your house to the next county and get out of Thames water. Kind of, I've tried. Immigration levels, they are lower than they've been for years. Isn't immigration halved in the last few years? It was at its highest under the Conservatives in 2023. Yet all the rhetoric feels more hostile than ever. What would you do differently about that in practical terms? Because there's something that's big in people's minds. The general public thinks immigration is the biggest issue in the country, but the stats suggest that it's not. So what would you do about that? Because you've got a communications issue there more than like a logistical one, haven't you? Yeah.
No, definitely. And I think it's really, really hard to have a liberal argument on immigration at the moment because it's become so polarized to the point where, and I think this is a general issue in politics at the moment, you just can't have a nuanced position on anything. Because as soon as you go, well, actually, that's not the whole story. They go, what, so are you saying immigration's okay? It's just, you can't sit down anymore and actually go through like the intricacies of what is going on in society.
What's driving that?
I think social media is a big part of it. Yeah. You know, people's attention spans are so short.
The algorithm rewards them short.
100%, sort of things, yeah. And the algorithm might have worked for me, so I can't completely, you know,
at least disgrace
the algorithm.
It's an honest answer.
But it's completely true, you know. So I think this is where, in both ways, it's really damaged people, because if you were this is, have you heard the term cosmic scouser?
Yeah, I have.
So
it doesn't apply to me or you, though.
No, it definitely doesn't.
Neither of us are on LSD.
But a cosmic scouser is literally that. It's people who kind of, they're just a bit wild, like they love magic mushrooms, like they think like there's aliens put us on like the earth and things like that. Now, those people in the past would have just been completely ridiculed and gone like, what are you talking about, Dave? Like, shut up, like go and have your pint and sit down. But now those people find a community online who also believe that aliens put us on Earth. I don't know why I'm talking about this, by the way.
No, it makes sense because that's rewarded by the algorithm. I think that's what
you're trying to say. Yeah. And so those people, like, whereas in the past you would have gone, that's a load of nonsense. Now it's rewarded with, you know, a community of people who go, I think you're right. And I think that's led to the rise of populism. It's led to Trump. It's led to Farage. And, you know, it's quite scary to say it could lead us to other really desperate situations as well.
Queer rights, they don't exist in a vacuum, do they? And the world's shaped by three powers now. We've learned that, like, recently more than ever. The US, Russia and China. What does defending LGBTQ plus people look like in foreign policy terms? Look at how aggressive the United States is, like, exporting its domestic policy to the UK in abortion and a whole host of other things. So what do you think standing up for queer rights looks like in foreign policy terms?
I think one, it's in standing up to people like Trump and people who just go around, you know, saying things about that community, like, willy-nilly, as if it's, you know, not damaging that community. And I know there's a lot of people in that community that are quite frightened in America for that reason. So it's, you know, making sure that us as progressive-minded people stand up against big bully leaders like Trump who are just, you know, petulant children, essentially. And also calling out atrocities against that community in different communities. And, you know, it might surprise you as a Lib Dem to hear me talk about Brexit and talk about the European Union, but keeping those international institutions that are based on shared ideology and shared values together, because I think it only benefits, like, those who are ignorant. It only benefits the likes of Trump and those who would disparage, like, the LGBTQ community to break those institutions up. So I think working with our allies across the European Union and across the world is a massively important thing now more than ever, because there are people who are making movements against that community.
Let's broaden that a bit. We've just seen today Trump in Davos and people really not being sure how to deal with them, ridiculing Emmanuel Macron for his sunglasses and all that kind of thing. How would the Lib Dems deal with Trump? How would, if the Lib Dems are in power, if you were in a position to dictate the direction of that, how would you, as a Liberal Democrat, deal with Donald Trump? Because I don't think Keir Starmer's approach has particularly worked, has it?
I think so. I mean, there's part of me that wants to say, get all the LGBTQ community together and go and invade Greenland ourselves and then occupy Greenland before Donald Trump can. But being serious, I think if it was me in Keir Starmer's position, I mean, I think what Ed Davies done at the moment in standing up to Trump is really brave and you know, the right move. I always go back to, I was saying this on Channel 5 today, I always go back to Love Actually, when Hugh Grant stands up to Billy Bob Thornton, you know, and he says, like, we're not going to take this anymore. I just think, like, I think we need a little bit of that. I just think we need a little bit of someone who's not prepared to take shit, basically, from America just to keep a special relationship going. You know, it's important to have a relationship with the United States of America, but we have that relationship person to person, like, so the British people and the American people, not because of any prime minister or any president. So I think if a president is overstepping what that relationship means, then by all means, he should be called out. And we need people in government that are willing to do that. And unfortunately, that isn't Keir Starmer. I mean, I couldn't really imagine him in a room with Donald Trump putting his foot down and saying, no, Donald, like, this is completely out of order. I think he'd probably lie down and get his belly tickled. But it's...
I'd love to see that.
That's a bad image, isn't it? Like, sorry about that. But yeah, I just sincerely think we need someone who's got a little bit of guts about them.
There's one more question for you. Why should queer people who feel politically disillusioned, which is most of them, why should they take a chance on you and the Liberal Democrats?
Yeah. I think there's kind of a non-political answer to this, and then there's a political answer to this, and I'm not going to say the non-political answer to this, like, because I think a lot of people have put that in my Instagram comments already. But in terms of the actual, like, political answer to it, and I genuinely, like, genuinely believe this in my heart. So 80% of Liberal Democrat members, I'm not lying, like 80% of Liberal Democrat members are probably part of the LGBTQ community.
80%?
Yeah, honestly, come to Lib Dem conference, you still have a great time. Like, honestly.
They say that about Republican conventions as well, though, don't they?
Yeah. Well, there's quite a few in the Tories as well, actually, but not as many as the Lib Dems. I think it's that kind of, like, liberalism to me, and I touched on this earlier, liberalism to me is about being able to be unashamedly yourself and not being judged for it. So as long as you're not impacting on someone else's life, you should be able to live exactly the life that you want. And the Lib Dems try to put policies in place that make that happen and allow people to live that sort of life. And I think, you know, in places where we're in control of certain councils or we've got certain MPs, you know, this reform nonsense of taking down, you know, the pride flag, that has been massively pushed back. So I would implore people to research, like, Lib Dem councils that have pushed back on that and have had a common sense view about standing up for that community. One of the things I'm really proud of, as I mentioned before, is you know, equal marriage that was implemented when we were in government, but also a constant commitment to those values of freedom, openness, transparency, and living a life that you feel like you want to live. And that for me is liberalism personified.
Okay. Thank you very much for making the time to come and speak to us. The very lovely Carl Cashman, everybody. Thank you.
Queer politics, sex, and culture. Outcast World.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.